Well, I think we've just had two fine examples of communication there. Choir, you certainly spoke to us. Well, you certainly spoke to me. I will speak for myself only. Can you not hear? You can hear me, yes? Okay. Oh, you're saying amen, yes. So you certainly spoke to me, and I do believe you certainly spoke to many others. And I will say the Reverend Dr. King certainly knew how to communicate, did he not? He knew when and how to use language that encouraged, and he knew how to use language that confronted and even scolded a bit. This morning we heard just a little tiny excerpt from his letter from a Birmingham jail. If we'd read the whole thing, well, that's pretty much all we'd do this morning. Perhaps this was uncomfortable to hear. It was meant to be read, and it was meant to be confrontational. And in this letter, he was confronting, well, most of us. He was challenging our privilege and telling us to get with the program. Today, on Martin Luther King's actual birthday, let's talk about getting with the program. If we're going to be an effective church in the world, do you want to be an effective church in the world? Okay. If we're going to be that, well, then we need to get our own house in order first. If we're going to be out there doing the work that needs to be done, we need to first figure out how to communicate with one another. Now, over the last couple of days, we've had a couple of workshops here, one focusing on healing and one focusing on our history. And some of you have told me that we don't always communicate well with one another. And if any of you have ever been part of a movement where people aren't communicating well with one another, if any of you have been following what's going on with the Women's March coming up and seeing some of the shenanigans where people are feeling offended because of disempowerment on this side or that, you know, if people aren't communicating well with one another, things don't get done. So we could be doing things better. And that's true for most folks. Even if we're doing them well, we could be doing them better. So let's take a look. Do you know the movie Independence Day? Who knows the movie Independence Day? A lot of you. So there's a part in the movie where Will Smith and Jeff Goldblum are in an alien spacecraft, and Will Smith doesn't have the controls quite right, and he says, oops. And then a little later on, Jeff Goldblum does a bit when they've reached the mothership, and he hasn't told Will Smith the complete plan, and Jeff Goldblum says, well, Will Smith says, when the hell were you planning to tell me? And Jeff Goldblum says, oops. And which Will Smith says, we're going to have to work on our communication. So let's do that. It's important. Some of you know that I was a nurse practitioner before I was a minister. I learned an important lesson in my training for that. I remember once when I was practicing sutures. I mean, like practicing doing stitching in my setting on a real live patient. And I dropped a stitch. Well, any of you who ever sew know you can drop a stitch in real life, and I dropped a stitch, and it came out of my mouth, the thing that happens when you do something. I said, oops. Which apparently didn't fill my patient with confidence. My supervisor kicked me under the table. Don't say that. Oh, right. Well, my patient didn't have all the information. He didn't know that I just dropped a stitch. I fixed that. I took ownership of my own. Oh, I'm sorry. This is what happened. Let me fix that. And that was an easy fix. I explained and I apologized. And I learned to stop doing that, to stop saying oops. I expect I've made some communication oopses here at Brew. I know that some of you Some of you have experienced me as distant or cold even, and some of you have been disappointed that I haven't yet learned all of your names. I think there have been moments where I've looked at you and probably communicated that I'm searching really hard for your name that I know I'm supposed to know. I want to thank you for communicating that clearly to the transition team, and I invite you always to speak directly to me. I hope that you're feeling comfortable enough, or that you will feel comfortable enough to come to me directly. Now that I know this, I can pay more attention to it. That's one way that we communicate. It's much better to go directly to a person than to go about the person, right? That Reverend Madeline, I just can't stand her. Don't tell her. But I just can't, right? Sometimes we might be responsible for passing incomplete information on to others. Perhaps in your life you've run across someone who delights in purposely passing on misinformation. When I'd broken up with my high school boyfriend, there was another boy in my class who loved to just see people mix it up. He wanted to make trouble for fun. So he told my ex-boyfriend that I was saying nasty things about my ex. And he told me that my ex-boyfriend was saying mean things about me. And did we each go and confirm to the other one that this was happening? Of course we didn't. No. We just believed him, and we ended up in this big, very long fight, which was very silly. But very often we pass along incomplete or misleading information carelessly. We don't intend to misinform anyone, but we don't stop to check that we have all the information before passing it along or before acting on it, and it can still be harmful. In 1996, there was a bomb that was, this is now 20 years ago, there was a bomb in Centennial Olympic Park in Atlanta. A security guard, Richard Jewell, discovered the bomb, and as a result, most people were evacuated and casualties and injuries were much lower than they otherwise might have been. But in the aftermath of the bombing, the FBI investigated Jewell as a potential suspect. The FBI was doing its job. Journalists, however, took this little bit of information and ran with it. Jewell was tried and convicted in the press, even though he was never, ever charged with a crime. His life was destroyed, and eventually the bomber, Eric Rudolph, was discovered. But the damage had been done. People had acted with incomplete and inaccurate information. I know I've been guilty of this myself. I know that I have participated in the church rumor mill in my home congregation. I've passed on incomplete and inaccurate information to others, and it hasn't been helpful. Did you hear what the board did? Well, I heard. Let's try an experiment. Who remembers the game of telephone? Let's play it. I'm going to start over here. Beth, you want to help me play? Let's see how far this goes, and let's see what happens. Okay, I'm going to start here, and you're going to pass it down,
okay.
And we're going to see how far it gets around the sanctuary. Turn me off, Larry. Peter, I keep calling you Larry. Peter, turn me off. Okay, Peter, you can turn me back on. See, that's a thing I do, too. I decide that somebody's name should be something else. I don't know why I do it. I do it with my children. Okay, now keep passing that around, and let's see how well we do with that. Now, this is vocal verbal communication. We're all in a room together. We can see each other face to face. That's the best way to communicate. And even then, when we keep relaying a message instead of going directly to the source, we can lose and misinterpret things. We'll see how it goes. And then sometimes we have trouble with communication when we're not privy to all the facts. We have incomplete information, but then we might make assumptions based on the incomplete information that we have. Perhaps you remember a famous photograph from the cover of Life magazine at the end of World War II that pictured a sailor kissing a nurse in Times Square. Remember, okay? And if I'd planned ahead enough and remembered that I wanted to include this, I would have given Anise that picture. We would have shown it. But do you know? So you know that picture is really a romantic photograph, isn't it? Would you be surprised to know that it was a sexual assault? I mean, it's a fantastic photograph from the point of view of photography. But what people didn't know from looking at it was that the nurse didn't know the sailor. He was drunk, and he grabbed her. That was not at all consensual. We didn't have all the facts. Sometimes information has to be incomplete. In the church, we strive to be open in all that we do. Board minutes are published, and board meetings are open. But personnel files, for example, are confidential. Just as you expect your own employers to keep your personnel matters confidential, we are bound by those same rules here in the church. Soon you'll be forming a search committee. Quite a lot of what the search committee will be doing will be in strict confidence. Not all ministers who go into search are in open search. It's critical that the committee be allowed to do their work and that they have your support. It's also critical that we recognize the work of the previous search committee. They did a great job. They did their job, they presented you with a candidate, and you, as a congregation, voted for that candidate who became your settled minister. Sometimes that doesn't work out. It might be tempting to second guess the previous search committee, or even yourselves in hindsight. But if I could live my life through hindsight, I'd only have winning lottery tickets and my investment portfolio would be so good. So far, I've talked about some of the pitfalls of communication, but how do we communicate better? How can we be great communicators? Is it simply a matter of avoiding the pitfalls? Well, that's a start. But wait, there's more. We communicate in so many ways: our body language, our facial expressions, our tone of voice. Our words are almost the smallest bit of our communications. That's why emails aren't really great for communicating big ideas and for having conversations. Emails are fine for quick memo-type things. Here is the list of people who are volunteering for the next 3 weeks. What time do you want to meet? But it's not the place to have a meeting or to discuss important things, precisely because we can't hear tone or see body language. All we can do in email is speak regularly or shout with capital letters and occasionally send a smiley emoji, maybe, right? I know that several months ago, I replied quickly to an email from my phone. I was typing quickly and with my thumbs, so I gave a very short answer, something along the lines of, "I already know how to do that." Later on, I read what I'd sent, and I realized that it could easily have come across as dismissive and condescending. Fortunately, I had an opportunity to clarify and apologize if I'd come off in a way I hadn't intended. And then there's listening. Did you ever hear the saying, "God gave you two ears and one mouth, so use them in proportion"? Active listening is something that we can cultivate. It means not always waiting to jump in with the thing that we want to say next, but truly listening to what someone else has to say, not so that we can comment on it or judge it or fix it, but just to listen to it. So along those lines, I think I will give you some homework. Don't worry, there's no grade. Let's practice some active listening. I'd like you to listen to each other here, not here this minute, but here you know, you can talk to each other during, you know, in coffee hours, after the annual meeting, not the annual, the town hall. Sometimes I misspeak, and then you see you were listening right there. Let's see if you can articulate someone else's theology. That means that you have to listen without judgment, ask thoughtful questions, and repeat back what you've heard to make sure that you've got it right. Think you can do it? Think you can? You can. There is no try, only do. I bet you can do it. I know you can do it. Now let's see how we've done with that game of telephone. Where is it? Who's got it? It's over. Now, it is not the last person who, remember, it is the whole chain, okay? So what have you got? What's the message that you heard? Interesting. Okay. So what he said was there will be a Buddhist monk here at 7. This is the original message. The UUs are meeting at 200 Independence Avenue at 9:30 for the Women's March, but you might want to come here first for carpooling to the Vienna Metro. And okay. Now that's true. Okay. Now that's true, by the way. That is where and when the UUs are meeting up. I don't know what time the carpools are leaving here, though. And that will be doing some of the work that Reverend Dr. King has called us to, some of it. But look at what happens when we hear a message that's gone down the pike a bit. Well, I heard that the board has decided that they're going to sell the building so that we can buy a swimming pool in Centerville and become a swim team and not be a church anymore. What? Best to go to the source. The board has not, just to clarify, discussed at any time that I am aware selling the building, buying a swimming pool in Centerville, and becoming a swim team. So, Reverend Dr. King, I think in 1966 once said, when he was asked to comment on rioting and to condemn the rioters, he said he wasn't going to condemn the rioters. He said it wasn't his way, but he wasn't going to condemn them because he said rioting was the language of the unheard. Let us not be unheard. Let us learn how to communicate. We've covenanted to be in a holy community together. Let's communicate and build the beloved community. Let us do the work in the world together. Namaste.